The speed with which the serpents moved was appalling. The massive beasts were struggling one against another to get a purchase on the ships, pushing and shoving to get at what was evidently pure delectation, and meanwhile beneath them the deck pitched and heaved as their weight threw the ship all ahoo. The unfortunates in the rigging, coated in the slime, were immediate victims, snatched like particular titbits even as the men tried in desperation to flee down the ropes. Wide jaws tore at the cables, and the spars yawed wildly and went tumbling down, throwing more of the slush upon the men on the deck to draw the serpents' attention. A smaller of the serpents had managed to wriggle itself onto the deck of the Nereid entirely, almost, only its long tail dangling back over the side, and it began to pursue the sailors with such enthusiasm that it thrust its entire head into the fore ladderway. The axes were coming out now, however, axes and the great guns firing, and as Temeraire and Disquierca flew to the ships, beating urgently, Lawrence saw a tall man leap forward and swing down upon the small serpent's neck, directly behind the head which had been thrust below. In two strokes he had cleaved the spine, and the body went into furious convulsions that tore the head the rest of the way from the body, spurting dark blood in torrents across the deck. It ran orange-red over the ship's white-painted rail and down its side, and the smell of dragon blood mingled with the fish-rot and kelp. Temeraire dived and seized hold of one serpent by the shoulders, dragging it away from the ship as it lashed and flung back its open maw to try and snap at him, the coils and coils of its great length twisting and the small forelegs clawing at the air. Lawrence could see directly down into its jaws and throat, looking over Temeraire's neck, and a pallid hand within desperately clinging to the tissue of the gullet, a face, blooded but not yet senseless, gazing up at him in utter horror, before the serpent's thrashing shook the man loose, and he vanished still whole, deeper into the creature's belly. The serpent was unmanageable with its enormous mass drawn out of the water, and so violently clawing.
"I cannot keep hold of it," Temeraire panted, struggling to drag it still further.
But then Iskierka called,
"Only a moment, keep clear!"
and dived in. She blasted its dangling length with flame, the skin and scales crisping up and roasting with a dreadful stink. The serpent made a high, thin, shrieking noise and curled around itself like a beetle as Temeraire dropped it at last back into the water.
"That does for that one," Iskierka said, satisfied.
But Darunka had just darted in and flung yet another sack of the fish refuse all upon the disordered deck of the Nereid, closer now that the riflemen were all in disarray, and still more of the serpents came boiling out of the water in a frenzy. There were dozens of them, ripping, tearing, nothing coordinated, only a maddened and savage fury which did not know even their own kind. As the axes and cutlasses bit into their flesh, they began to snap and tear at their injured fellows, at the rigging, even at the guns slick with fish scraps, a cannon breaking free of its moorings and running riot across the deck to smash through the railing, taking half a dozen men and a serpent with it. The deck was slick with their blood, and the guns roared. Cannon tore into their flesh and flung them back into the water. But more came, and the injured, only still more frenzied, clawed in blind, mad rage at the source of their hurt, and one of the greater monsters, perhaps now recognizing the ship itself as prey and danger, pulled its huge forequarters to the far side, and plunging down over into the water began to loop the whole vessel. Lawrence had seen the manoeuvre attempted once before, on the Allegiance, a vessel nearly twice the draught of the poor Nereid, and only the greatest efforts had kept it from succeeding.
"We must stop her, that one!"
Lawrence shouted to Temeraire, who dived and set his claws into the travelling length, the spine itself too protected by a vast and razored network of hard, spiny fins. He strained back, beating, but as they began to drag the serpent clear, above them one of the spars tumbled loose and tipped towards them, and Lawrence was half blinded with the muck as it splattered from the sail upon Temeraire's back and wings. He wiped the stuff from his eyes, only to see a great pink, saw-toothed maw coming lamprey-wide towards him, unblinking orange eyes fixed on him with intent greed. Lawrence jerked his sword loose, pistols useless after the dousing, and managed to bring it down into the approaching lower jaw, opening a deep purplish gash into the creature's lip, which made it recoil, only a little, but Temeraire noticed, and snapped at the beast. It snapped back, and then turning its head bit at his wings, seizing the pin joint in its mouth and wrestling back and forth, while it tried to pierce the tough, resilient membrane. Temeraire roared at it, the great startling thunder of the divine wind resonating painfully in the bones of Lawrence's ears, and it let go and fell away with that high, shrilling cry.
But more were lunging at them, and the great serpent beneath them was all the while marching on. The noose was drawing tight, and abruptly the port rail snapped like matchsticks beneath it, and the starboard gone an instant later. The bulk of it slipped Temeraire's claws and fell to the deck heavily as the support was taken away. He darted down again to seize a fresh hold, and four serpent heads reared up feeding from the deck, one tipping back to swallow the better part of another victim. Temeraire twisted away from their stretching mouths, and Lawrence had managed to pack his powder fresh. He pistoled one of the creatures directly in the eye and saw the sclera cloud with dark blood as it recoiled, shrieking. But Temeraire had to beat away again. They were biting at him from all sides, and he had not won a fresh grip. He had only brought away one sailor, snatched from the deck, and now twisted to hand him up to Lawrence, a midshipman, perhaps 14, hair and face thick with slime.
"Good save you, sir, and him,"
the boy said, glazed with horror and polite by reflex. With shaking hands he laced his belt through a harness ring when Lawrence showed him, and wound his arms through the straps to hold on. Then Temeraire was making another plunging attempt. He attacked, lower down on the side this time, and between the squirming press of the serpent's bodies, managed to set his claws again into the great one. But he was fighting now against the ocean, too. The swell slapped at his tail and the lower edges of his wings as he sought to hover and pull. And then he was windmilling back, his grip lost. Another great serpent, surging suddenly up from the depths, had seized hold of the deck and pulled all the ship groaning askew. The Nereid was tipping, and the serpents, scrabbling up her far side, still trying to reach over to the deck, tipped her further yet. There were cries audible within, and the cannon trying to roar, and then abruptly the loop was drawing tight and tight. The decking began to crack and splinter, and the water pouring over the rail was rushing into the gaps. She was sinking. Lawrence looked out in desperation. Eskirka had seized on to the otter's anchor and dragged it deliberately aground, into the shallow water on the shore where the serpents might not follow. Men were leaping from the sides to escape those which yet clung on, while Caesar and Kulingile worked to tear them away. Even Tarunka was now helping them, picking men out of the water to carry one after another to shore, and the Larrakia had come down to help pull out the staggering survivors. There was nothing better to be done.
"Temeraire!" Lawrence called. "Can you drag her onto the shoals or push her?"
And the looped serpent proved an unlikely and bleak handhold for Temeraire to use. Kulingile, diving, came to join him, setting his own long claws deep into the flesh, and they together dragged the hulk, even as she splintered and cracked still further. The deck was nearly empty now of men, pillaged clean, and waves slapping flat against the tipped deck washed clean the muck with seawater. She was settling lower in the water every moment, but they were moving steadily in towards shore as well, and as the water grew more shallow, the less maddened serpents dropped away. The second enormous serpent looked up at them with what Lawrence, in an unpleasant fancy, thought for a moment was cool deliberation, and then it, too, let go and slipped away into the clouded water. They pulled the Nereid at last onto a small reef, near the otter, and there, with Temeraire's claws and the tearing of the coral, managed at last to carve away the looped serpent, already dead and slick with blood. Domain was already rescuing men from the hatchway, standing in his straps to help them crawl out onto Kulingile's back, while the dragon clung onto the railing, his sides belled out hugely to support him. There was no hope of setting her to rights. The keel itself had cracked, and great seams opened all along the hull. Already it was growing dark. Lawrence sent Domain back to shore, and Temeraire hovered to receive what other men could be saved. Willoughby was handed up, with his eye bandaged over and one leg gone below the knee, the surgeon climbing up after him, the gun crews crawling out, grimed with smoke. They could only hold on to whatever harness they could reach, and though Temeraire flew slowly and carefully to shore to set them down, some lost their grip and plunged down into the surf, only slowly to drag themselves out, crawling the last few feet upon the sand. They made another journey, and then a third, picking men out of the water. The sun was sliding away behind the pavilion, glowing red upon the lacquered roof. In the water the corpses of sea serpents rose and fell with the lapping tide. Temeraire sank upon the sand, heaving breath, and his neck bowed deeply with fatigue. The Larrakia were watching. The young men who had been helping to carry the half-drowned survivors had drawn back and taken up their spears again, standing loosely ringed along the shore. Many of them, quiet and watchful, and others joining them.
Several of the younger Chinese men also, with swords which looked awkward in uncertain grips. They were none of them soldiers.
"Mr. Blinken," Rankin said from Caesar's neck, "if you please, let us have a little order here. Caesar, if you would."
And Caesar reared up onto his hind quarters, making himself however more imposing could be managed, and thrusting out his breast with the bright, blazoned red stripe. The aviators began loosely to form an opposing line. Lawrence slid down from Temeraire's neck and laid a hand on the soft muzzle, feeling Temeraire's breath going in laboured rasps, aggravated again, no doubt, by the excessive use of the divine wind. Whatever they had in the way of supply remained back in the camp, further along the curve of the bay and out of reach.
"Roland," Lawrence said, low, "go and tell Domain. If it comes to fighting, you are to go back to the camp and fetch out powder and shot and whatever guns might have been left."
She nodded and ran to join Domain on Kulingile, who, despite fatigue, was perhaps among all the beasts the nearest to wide awake, his eyes bright with hunger. Some of the Larrakia had come fresh from their hunting. A brace of small kangaroos were roasting on a spit behind their line, and this had all of Kulingile's attention. The sailors lay inert upon the sand, spent more even than the dragons, and worn past exhaustion by the wreckage and the horror of what Lawrence hardly knew how to call a battle, a struggle against some elemental force, invoked too unwarily, and as swiftly gone when its bloodthirst had been appeased. Out past the edge of the harbour, many of the serpents were at play again, heedless like children who had already forgotten the reproof. The Larrakia men were speaking amongst themselves, spears held low and ready, the elders in convocation with and the younger men interjecting occasionally. There was a hesitation on both sides. No one was unshaken by the violence of the eruption. Galandu came forward out of the men and beckoned to Tarunka to translate, and to Lawrence he said simply, "It is time for you to go."